Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-3051, United States of America v. Ricardo T. Lacey, appellant. Mr. Hart for the appellant, Ms. Kurt for the appellee.
Good morning. Mr. Lacey raised two issues in his initial brief. My pleasure, the government has agreed with one of them, that is the sentencing issue. And so I will not devote any attention to that unless the court has questions. Rather, I'd concern the last 99 minutes and 30 seconds I have to ask this court to consider the other issue we raised, and that is the theft issue. Mr. Lacey was convicted of the D.C. charge of offense. We've challenged that on the basis of failure of the elements. But let me explain how we arrived.
The plain meaning of the statute says nothing about aspartation, right? I mean,
that's correct.
You have to reach that through an argument by analogy from the way we've treated other religions, right?
Because that's one of the ways to reach that. That's not the only way.
Right. But the plain text talks about to take or exercise control.
Yes.
Did Mr. Lacey take $5,000?
He was given $5,000.
Did he take it?
Well, it was in his hand, but he
so he took it. I mean, if I were to give you something and you grabbed it from me in your hand, common sense meaning is you take it.
I'm going to disagree with the word grab. He did have it in his hand, apparently.
So he didn't take it.
I believe the scenario is this. If the court were to look at the videotape that was made for the transaction, the camera's in the dashboard of the car. It cuts off about here, so we don't see what happens underneath the camera. The undercover officer is in his car, in the Honda. Mr. Lacey gets in the car. And I think there was a...
So are you disputing... I mean, Officer Manley says he gave it. He gave him the $5,000. Are you disputing that Officer Manley gave him
$5,000? Yes. If the word gave is to mean that he possessed it.
So is your contention that it just stayed in the console? The $5,000 never left the
console? I'm not certain what happened to it. I do know that Officer Manley did say at trial that he gave it to him. And there is some evidence on the videotape that Officer Manley thought he had
it. Your argument's all on the caption side, because you wouldn't dispute that if he had it, he moved with it, right? I mean, aspartation is the slightest movement. Is that why you haven't focused on it?
I'm painfully aware of the slightest movement.
Okay. So I understand, your argument sort of rises or falls on the caption side,
no.
Whether he took it.
Well, yes in a way, but no in a way, and let me explain why. If the court were to view, fortunately, we have the circumstances on videotape. The court can view that. The court will see that Mr. Manley, if he was given the money, had it in his possession for about 30 seconds. He got out of the car at the direction of the officer, walked back to the trunk, and within 30, 40 seconds, he was pounced on by about 8 police officers. Officer Manley indicated that he gave them the money at trial. Of course, in his report, he said he showed him the money in the council. Let's take his trial testimony as true. Even if he had that money, even if Mr. Lacey had the money when he got out, that is the slightest movement. I agree. But whether it really means he controlled that in the presence of those police officers.
But the language of the statute is take or exercise control, right?
Yes.
It means to take it.
Well, I think take or carry away must mean that he had it in his control. That is, for instance, if Officer Manley threw the money at him and it bounced off of him, that wouldn't be a take or control.
He didn't take it.
Yes, although it touched him and it moved. Our point is that Mr. Lacey really never had any control over the money because he was in the presence of police officers who at all times knew that they would have control of the money.
Well, maybe I'm reading this wrong. My memory is, and I'm trying to find the statute in front of me, is that the language of the statute is take or exercise control.
I'd agree with that.
So it doesn't need to be control.
Taking or exercising control is the statutory
language. But we would assert that take means more than just touch, that there must be some exercise of dominion or control. When I read the government's brief last week, I noticed that the major part of their argument relies on a D.C. Court of Appeals case named, and I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly, Moorer, which the D.C. Court of Appeals decided in 2005, and in a footnote said theft does not have as an element aspartation. And I thought, well, geez, if that's true, I'm dead in the water. So I read the case, read the footnote, and I don't think that case exactly stands for that. And I'd ask the court to consider it carefully if it's going to use that as a rationale for decision in this case. Because more involved not the question of whether theft, the offense of theft, had that as an element. If it looks at the footnote, you'll see that the court refers just to the statute. No reasoning, no logic. But that wasn't the question in Moore. The question was whether taking property.
If we disagreed with you and found that he in fact did take it, you wouldn't disagree with the fact that that aspartation occurred after that. I mean, we really don't need to reach the issue whether in the 1982 amendments aspartation became part of an element of the crime or not, right? Because here, if he took, I recognize you're not with me on whether he took, but if he took it,
if the court and I were to agree on the word take, yes, I would agree to finish it. But I'm not certain that the word take is as simple as the court indicates it may view it.
But aspartation is pretty simple here.
Yes, but it has to be real aspartation. It has to be something where he has some control over it, where he can move it on his own will, where he has some control over it. In this case, there wasn't any such situation. I think probably ever since the advent of the word processor, prosecutors have engaged in the ability to overcharge.
Yeah, back when you had to tell the secretaries you had to do 112 counts, they didn't do 112 counts.
That's correct. I'm not retyping this indictment. You charge it the way it's written. And I'm willing to bet that when indictments had to be handwritten, there were even fewer charges per case. But other than that observation...
I don't go back quite that far, counsel.
Well, neither do I, Your Honor, I'm guessing. But my point is that there really is no pushback on that tactic from reviewing courts because the check of a trial court, the check of a jury verdict, has almost always been significant enough to eliminate any harm from that. In this particular case, the system hiccuped a little. And this is one of those exceptions that got through. And when I first started this, I began with sort of a gut feeling. And I said to myself, well, look, everyone's pretending here. The police officer is pretending to be a buyer. He's talking to a man who's pretending he has drugs, who it comes to a car where he gives pretend drugs to the pretend buyer, who then gives him money pretending that he can have the money, when everyone involved except Mr. Lacey knew he couldn't have the money. So with all that pretending, I thought to myself, there's really not a traditional theft case here. So I thought I'd look up, see if courts have considered this situation before, and I could find nothing. Thinking that maybe perhaps I'm just not a good researcher, I waited for the government to come back and say, well, many courts have approved this, of where undercovers have charged theft in a burn bag situation, let's call it. But, you know, the government didn't list any either. If this court were to approve this conviction, it would be the first one that I know of to approve the use of a theft charge in these circumstances.
It really goes back not just to the aspartation, but whether taking means something. I think you're getting it. This taking means something more than having physical possession of something. You've taken something. If you are not stealing it, you're walking down the street and somebody says, would you like this free candy bar? And they hand you the candy bar. You've taken it in the generic sense of the word, but you've not committed theft if they told you to take it. And I'm wondering if the government really has any more on taking here than that.
Well, if Your Honor were to look at the tape or look at the transcript, you would see Officer Manley say the only words that make any sense, take this. This is five.
Mm-hmm.
And you see maybe his hand move underneath the camera. You don't see what Mr. Lacey gets. And he's directed to take it. Then he's told to get out of the car by the police officer.
Are we required in this instance to review the evidence most favorably to the government?
Yes, Your Honor. I see that my time is up. Unless there are other questions, I'll sit down. Thank you.
He will give you a couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. Suzanne Kurt for the United States. As we stated in our brief, our position is twofold. Number one, that asportation is not an element of theft under the District of Columbia Code. It's not in the statute, in the plain language of the statute, as Judge Griffith has noted. And, of course, there is authority from the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, the Moorer case, that states asportation is not an element. And then, finally, we've also referred to language in the District of Columbia jury instructions that discusses that asportation is not an element of this, of the new statute that was enacted that is no longer, you know, technically a common law crime. Secondly, however, even if asportation were an element, there clearly was asportation in this particular case. I do note that when describing the evidence, Judge Walton stated, as we've discussed in our brief on page 21, that the defendant had the money in his hand when he was outside of the undercover officer's car. But in any event, the evidence showed that the officer handed money to Mr. Lacey after saying something that sounds on the tape like, here's the five. Mr. Lacey gets out of the car. They go to the back where Mr. Lacey...
I'm wondering how that's theft. If the officer hands him something and he intends for him to have it, and he walks away with it, when did it become theft?
Well, Your Honor, it's theft by false pretenses, because that was in exchange for what was supposed to be drugs, and it wasn't drugs. It was a false substance, and the PCP was, I believe it was vinegar. So it's theft by false pretenses, as is one of the specific ways to steal that is described in the statute. And that is why it's a theft.
I wonder if there isn't enough crime going on already without officers going out and giving people money they don't mean for them to keep in return for drugs that aren't drugs.
Well, Your Honor, of course, this was part of a third in a series of drug sales that we were, you know, trying to get from Mr. Lacey. But clearly there is asportation, and again, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, the court must conclude that there was a theft and even an asportation. And unless the court has questions about the sentencing aspect of this case, we would submit on our brief. I see no more questions. I thank the court for its time. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hart, you need any more time?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
If you would, while you're up, tell me the footnote number on that Moorer case.
It's either 11 or 14. Either 11
okay,
or 14.
Thanks, sir. Go ahead.
There are two things, and I excuse if they're disjointed. And the one is that I did bring my jury and my red book with me, and I would ask the court, I won't read the court committee's comment, but I would ask the court to go to page 363 when it considers this matter, because it's not quite as clear as the government claims in its brief. And just one sentence here. A bracketed paragraph is provided for use if the defendant possessed the property only a brief time, meaning that they did consider possession an element of carrying away. They also said we omitted the statutory language of carrying away in the instruction. Nothing explicit in the statute in the legislative history indicated that should be included. The committee concluded, however, that taking control, and that's in parentheses, encompasses carrying away, since carrying away has been construed as the slightest movement. So the point I'm trying to make is...
Say that again. Carrying away has been construed as what?
As the slightest movement of the object from its original location.
And where was the object originally located here?
Well, I guess that would depend on...
I mean, that doesn't help you. The slightest movement doesn't help
you. Well, I'm willing to point out things that even don't help me, because I think there are things in here which indicate the committee didn't completely throw out the concept of possessory taking, which is important. And the final point I wish to make in my 23 seconds is that it's not unusual for people in drug situations like this to bring a burn bag to the operation and leave the real drugs in a tree box or underneath a nearby car until they confirm the presence of money and the non-presence of a gun. And I would add that there was another person involved who escaped. No, I'm sorry, he didn't escape. He was caught. He may well have had the real drugs. So it's not necessarily theft by false pretenses. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hart, you were appointed to represent the appellant in this court, and the court thanks you for your service to the court and to the country.
Thank you.
Thank the United States also.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Call your next case.